The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University. And I'm joined in studio today with Jim Saulnier, a certified financial planner. Certified? How about certified?
Certified.
Certified.
Like Sudafed.
Kind of. It's Boston accent. Certified? No. So, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're also here with Peter Scott, our esteemed estate planning attorney.
Good morning.
Good morning.
No, it's actually good afternoon.
You might need to aim that more
a little bit
towards
how's
your...
That? Is that a little better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Tilted.
There we go.
There we go.
Yes.
Yes.
We want to hear all the glorious resonance of your booming radio voice.
I can be trained. So, it just takes a while.
So, welcome everybody to the Retirement IRA Show. This is a pre-recorded show, what we call a live recorded show, because we're going to do this whole thing in one take. So it simulates a live situation.
It's about as live as you can get without.
We've done many hundreds of these now without having to re-record. We've
just
only
a couple
had to re-record
times
maybe
up.
Twice,
yeah.
And it was a significant issue that could only be resolved by re-recording.
One, but where the microphone wasn't plugged in.
That was an issue, yes. That was a significant issue.
And then every once in a while when your gracious co-host utters something that's not...
Well, at least we don't have to re-record the whole show then.
We
I
just
can
beep
just
that
bleep it
out.
Yeah. So hopefully we have some amazing topics this morning. Well, for us, it's the afternoon.
For us, it's the afternoon. Today is August
15th, for those of you who are listening to this live on the radio. We're recording this on
August 11th.
August 11th, yeah. On a nice summer afternoon in Fort Collins, Colorado.
It's a little cloudy outside. I'm looking out the window.
It's nice temperature, though.
Yeah, it's not that outrageous hot. It's supposed to be very hot today. Today not meaning the day we're recording, but today, the day everyone's listening, Saturday. It's supposed to be hot today.
Nice. So anything, how did last week go?
I thought it went very well. Jim
well.
Got
yeah.
all the expressions spot on. We were very, very proud of him back
no
home.
No beating, dead,
I was
beating horses
off.
To death
no,
or
no,
pulling teeth from babies or
on the way there,
touting horns.
Yeah, he sort of expended his one faux pas on the way there, pulling teeth from a baby. But we got him straightened out, and he did fine.
Went well. We did nice. A trivia show. We did a trivia show on estate planning. We hadn't done one of those before.
Yeah.
So I think that went well. We had a lot of people called in. A lot of people called in and shared with us their answers.
Jim had to defend a couple of them to champion their cause, and successfully so. He's an eloquent advocate.
A couple of them could have went either way on the answers. So I stuck up for a few of our listeners.
Okay.
You're looking at me strange.
Well, I was thinking they either got the answer right or wrong. Is there, how's the...
Well, the issue had to do with the answers that were available. They weren't entirely clear to Jim's
okay.
standards. So
I understand.
He was able to
You're
champion
blaming
their
me.
Well, of course.
Well, that happens sometimes when I make up a test at school. Sometimes a question will end up not what I intended and maybe a little ambiguous. So I have to remedy that, to be fair. So I understand. I usually find a way to throw that question out if it's deemed to be defective. Seems the fair way to go.
One of the things I hate, and we talked about this on the way home, Pete, is when we have to take our recertification exams.
Right.
Because I think the regulators who make those exams, you read them, and they're all multiple guess. several could be the answer depending on. I'll read the questions and I sit and think, well, what about this? But yeah, that could be the answer unless it's this. And I read way too much into it. And as you shared with me, you got to really pick, if there's multiple potential answers, the dumbest one.
That's right, because we know too much, so we think of all the exceptions to right. the normal rule, and what they're looking for is what's the standard rule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So sometimes we outsmart ourselves.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, what are we going to talk about today? You're playing with your iPhone already.
I know. I'm getting ready to look things up.
You think we're going to have to get some edification or whatever it's called?
A lifelong
verification?
Verification?
Possibly. I thought you wanted me to look something up. There was a court case we were going to look up.
Oh, yeah. You looking up that one we were talking about?
I was
about?
Going to, but since you're now harassing me about using my phone on the radio.
Well, probably won't get to that until around section 3 or 4, so we should be all okay. set. Today, people, is going to be kind of a hybrid because this is called the Retirement and IRA Show. We're going to talk about IRAs. We're going to talk about retirement and estate planning. All in one.
Wow. That would make the title of our show would become even more lengthy. Instead of the Retirement and IRA Show is already kind of long. If it was Retirement, Estate, and IRA Show, that might exceed the allowable characters.
But we could use the initials REI.
I think we might get a little flack. Might catch a little
Someone
flack.
Someone has that already? That.
Someone might be using that already.
But it fits Retirement, Estate, and IRA Show.
Yeah.
REI.
Mm-hmm.
The REI Show.
The REI Show. Yeah, that's not going to. That's just begging for court action there.
Come on, let's see how long we can go before we get the letter.
Strong letter to follow.
Right, yeah, strong letter to follow.
We have an attorney here. Pete can send something back to him.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I dare you to sue us.
Yeah. You don't have the nerve to sue Jim. We call that marketing.
All right, so we'll skip the REI Show.
Okay.
We'll keep the Retirement and IRA Show.
With estate planning on the side as a subtitle.
Yeah. As a subtitle.
A side dish.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about a little bit today, people, is something that's very important. We like to have fun on the show, so we joke around a lot, but these are going to be real court cases we're going to go over. And what I'm trying to do is help our listeners understand, Pete, that you, as an estate planner, you help put in place estate documents. You can put in a will. You can put in a trust. You can help, as we say, make sure their assets go to who they want, when they want, how they want.
Correct.
So we understand that. And as we talked about last week on one of your trivia questions, estate plans it's not just when you die or become incapacitated. Estate plans can give people the ability to assist you almost at any point when you sign the documents. And it goes beyond just the passing of assets. Excuse me. It's to put in the HIPAA documentation, the power of attorney form for medical, power of attorney for property, healthcare directives, things of that nature. But most of the time when people hear estate planning, they think passing assets.
Right. They think death planning.
Okay. Death planning. However, there are certain assets, Pete, that don't really need an estate plan per se.
Right. They have their sort of own mind about where they go at someone's death. And that's some of what we're going to talk about today is built into the asset itself is a direction as to who it goes to at death, absent some redirection.
In English, what Pete said is...
Thank you for translating.
In Pete speak, what he's saying is certain assets pass by right of law, not necessarily your will.
Right. It's essentially a contract.
Exactly. Yeah. And what we're talking about is beneficiary designations. Anybody who has a pension plan, an IRA, a 401k, an employer-sponsored plan, an annuity, a life insurance policy, all of these items pass by right of law. Pass by who you write down on that beneficiary form. Now, you would think, whoever is on the beneficiary form gets it. Case closed. Let's move on to the next topic. This is easy. It doesn't work that way.
No. Nothing is really ever that easy, is it?
Never. And the problem is a lot of people don't know what they don't know, so they don't know
what they don't know.
And they need to know things that they don't know to be protecting.
Yeah, so that they do know what they didn't know before.
I know.
Exactly.
A lot of people don't know what they don't know. Unfortunately, a lot of advisors don't know what they don't know. And what we're talking about is sometimes people, especially in the case of blended families, divorce, and ERISA, and we'll explain in a minute what that is. I wouldn't say oftentimes, that's probably being too certain, but many times who is named on the beneficiary form will not get the asset. And that comes as a surprise to people. Now, it's not going to come as a surprise to you. You're dead. However, the people inheriting it who thought they were going to get it, and they don't, and someone, the dead guy probably didn't want to inherit the account, will end up inheriting it, and the courts and the law will be on that person's side.
Yeah, so what we're really talking about here are exceptions to the contract. There's these designated beneficiary designation forms, excuse me, create a contract between the person, the plan participant, and the custodian or
administrator
of that plan. And it provides direction to that administrator or custodian as to who to distribute this account to upon the death of the participant. But there's an override in certain cases, an override that essentially says, no, we're going to blow this up. That contract is not going to be held up where you have to do this instead. And those are the exceptions we're talking about.
Exactly.
Something that steps in and overrides this contract.
And they happen with far more regularity than people know.
Right.
And it's only the ones that make it to the sensationalization level, the only ones that the media picks up on that we hear about, but these happen all the time. And Pete, even a well-laid estate plan can't overcome some of these exceptions because, again, these are assets that travel outside of any estate plan you may put together.
Well, sure, the beneficiary designations are going to override a will, they're going to override a trust, and they're going to control. And then the exceptions we're talking about override the beneficiary designations that the participant had listed on the plan, whatever it might be.
Okay, and the big culprit in all of this, and it was passed with goodness, it was passed with good intentions, is a government law that passed in the early 70s. NBC News likes to take credit with being the forerunners of ERISA. Was it NBC or CBS? Because they did an expose on corporations and the pensions that were being essentially siphoned off and stolen from employees. And because of that newscast, the... how come I always start coughing every time I do my show?
That's a good question.
I don't know. It bugs the heck out of me. But anyways, I'm sorry, people. Chris doesn't put a cough button in. You should.
See that switch right on your mic? Perfect use of the... Yeah. The problem is the rest of us with microphones in the room...
So that didn't go over?
Well, less so. Maybe better. I have the perfect cough button for Jim. I'll just get you a very dense pillow.
We'll put that...
Hold it tightly
over
my head.
And hold it tightly against your face.
Yeah, but only for a minute or two, or five. Yeah.
Then I'll never cough again.
I can probably find you halls if we need to.
Okay, what happened, people, in the early 70s is, believe it or not, some companies were stealing pensions. Pensions that were promised to employees. The news service, I forget if it was NBC or CBS, does an expose on it. And as is often the case, you see this all the time, news corporations actually doing what government watchdogs should do and actually discovering fraud, deceit, corruption, and then the politicians reacting. So they reacted by passing in 73, I believe it was, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, otherwise known as ERISA. ERISA does an awful lot. ERISA will protect a person's pension. It sets certain rules, I guess you could call them Chinese walls, between the corporation and the pension, so the corporation can no longer raid the pension and take the money from it.
I don't think China has anything to do with it.
No, that's a saying, Chinese walls. It elects a Chinese wall between something.
Like the Great Wall of China?
You've never seriously heard that? There's a Chinese wall?
No.
Pete?
I have heard that.
Thank you.
In China or here?
No, here.
No, here.
That's okay. A real saying. And I muffed China. That one up.
It makes sense. No, yeah. I believe you because the yeah. Great Wall of China was there to keep out the
Wow, you never heard a hordes. Euphemism before, an Americanism.
Americanism? No, they're called gymisms usually.
No, Chinese Wall is a real one. Pete's yeah. on my side on this one.
Yeah, for once.
Mm-hmm. It's probably you know, the generation before mine.
You're 5 years younger than me.
And well, my age starts with a 4. Yours starts with a 5. So there's a
barely.
There's a Chinese Wall there, right at 50. That there's one group that's on one side of the wall.
So you're saying this, Pete and I are on one side of the
and
wall?
And you use the phrase Chinese wall.
Wow.
Here, yes. we're kind of hip and new and
you're 5 years younger
age.
Than me. Let me keep reminding you.
We call it a firewall.
Okay. Well, we call it a Chinese wall, Pete and I's generation.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Okay. So now that I'm totally off base of what I was talking about.
No, it created a wall there
yes,
to protect.
Yes, protected pensions.
ERISA is there to protect the plan participants from... Oh, inappropriate actions by the administrators or the company itself that's sponsoring the plan.
Correct. But not only that, they went after spouses.
They went after spouses.
They went after protecting spouses. Oh, they went after yes. the working spouse who would divorce the non-working mm-hmm. spouse, keep all the pension to themselves, mm-hmm. and the non-working spouse was poor.
Mm-hmm. And also the worker who preferred to name their girlfriend or boyfriend as the beneficiary of the retirement account as opposed to the spouse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. So ERISA built in protections not only to protect the pension from employers, to protect the pension of the spouse of the worker. It gave the spouse certain rights mm-hmm. because people were divorcing right before retirement, running away with a full pension. The spouse who may have stayed at home and took care of the children got nothing. Or maybe got a little bit of Social Security if Social Security was paid into. So ERISA made a lot of moves. ERISA also created IRAs. ERISA is the law that created the IRA. However, as one of the greatest moments, yeah. ERISA created IRAs, but also exempted IRAs from ERISA rules.
Which is a head scratcher.
Exactly. Yeah. That was my moment.
Yeah, I got it.
It's kind of a Scooby-Doo moment.
All right, you're going to have to help me out right. with that one. Because my generation and his generation have no clue what you mean.
Oh, I know. This generation does.
Scooby-Doo mm-hmm. moment?
Oh, yeah.
What the heck's a Scooby-Doo moment?
Because he makes that sound kind of like what you make. The huh?
Oh. Oh, that's called a Scooby-Doo moment?
Well, those of us younger, hip generation like Peter and I.
Peter's older than me.
Well, he's apparently in the right generation now. You're in that gap. You're in that wedge kind of between that apparently has no home.
Well, a Scooby-Doo moment where ERISA creates IRAs and promptly exempts IRAs from ERISA rules. Mm-hmm. As we're also going to find out today, ERISA exempted a whole other host of plans. Pete, what plans were those?
Well, the public benefit or public employers.
Otherwise known as government.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what we call
it. So the government created a series of rules to protect pensions and spouses and then promptly exempted government pensions. And I guess
it's only the evil corporations that were taking advantage of people. Government never always works in the best interest of the population, right? That was their thought process.
Probably. No, actually, the thought process, I think, was implementing ERISA rules was going to be
cost
prohibitive. Yeah, it was going to be expensive.
But not for private industry.
No,
it's free.
Anything.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But they wanted to help state and local mm-hmm. governments not incur the cost of ERISA implementation, so they exempted them.
And to be fair about this, the IRAs weren't implemented in 72 when ERISA mm-hmm. first passed. It was sometime later through an amendment that IRAs were created.
Yeah, they were created under ERISA, but they weren't established immediately. It was the following year. It was either 73 or 74 that IRAs first came out, but they were created under ERISA.
Oh, okay.
From the best of my knowledge, you could very well be right.
I just thought it was a later date.
Well, it was just
they sprung forth from ERISA. Right. The timing of it is...
Right, but you know how they pass a law and they say, okay, beginning at this point is when they're
phased
in.
Right. Yep. Got it.
But again, IRAs were exempt. Why are we sharing all this with you? As we're going to explain to you people, ERISA can have some unintended consequences with your IRA, even though it doesn't apply to them. It can have implications for government pensions and 401ks and other employer plans because of the strong protections granted to spouses. But it also flies in the face of common knowledge, Pete, that the beneficiary designation form trumps everything. We often tell our clients it trumps everything but ERISA.
That's right.
ERISA is the most powerful, and it's more powerful than your beneficiary form. Mm-hmm. Your beneficiary form, as you alluded to, Pete, trumps your will, trumps your trust, trumps anything. Trumps Trump, I bet, if Trump was here.
Yeah. More powerful than a speeding locomotive.
Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
There we go.
Go ahead.
Chris.
Keep going.
What?
You don't know the third part of the Superman song?
Protects babies.
From pulling teeth?
No. Let me think about it for a second.
I don't know. It's tall buildings, faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall buildings. There's another
one. Yeah, that was it.
That was the third part.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive.
Able to leap
tall
buildings.
In a single bound.
Okay.
That's the three.
Yep. We got them.
You were tricking me. We already covered the three. There's not a fourth.
Okay.
And he wears tights. That was the other part. That was number four.
It's kind of like Underdog. I always like the theme song.
They're kind of like Underoos that he wears.
Graminals.
Graminals, yeah.
Okay.
I liked Underdog.
Underdog was good.
Here he comes to save the day. Isn't that Underdog?
No.
Or is that
I think
Mighty
that was
Mouse?
Mighty Mouse.
That was Mighty Mouse.
Underdog was,
speed of lightning, roar of thunder, fighting all who rob and plunder. Underdog.
Yeah, that's what it is. Underdog.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Taking you back down memory lane. Mm-hmm. That's what we should do, the top three cartoon songs 40 years ago.
No, we just changed to a new one. We haven't even done it once yet. By the way, we're doing a new
we'll talk to
musical countdown this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we have 3.5 minutes.
Okay, so let me get back to what I'm trying to get to today.
Please.
So what we're going to do, people, in the case of ERISA, we're going to explain to you, and we're going to do it by alluding to some very recent court cases where people that were specifically named, either directly or implied to be named indirectly, never got the inheritance that they thought they were entitled to. And when they fought it, they realized you might fight the law, but in
the
this...
The law wins.
In this case, I fought the law and the law won. They fought ERISA and ERISA won. Mm-hmm. So what we hope people to take out of this is right now, even though your IRA may be exempt from ERISA, there is a strong move. Most of our listeners, Pete, probably don't know this, but they're not in the industry like you and I are. But there is a very strong move by the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor, not the IRS, the Department of Labor regulates retirement plans.
And the IRS enforces
it. Enforces, right. The Department of Labor is trying to impose what is called the fiduciary standard on IRAs. In English, they're trying to make IRAs subject to ERISA. And if they can make IRAs subject to ERISA, they get the tougher fiduciary standards. But I'm worried because there's no certainty yet. But if they did apply IRAs themselves to ERISA, many of the court cases and the problems that blended families ran into that we're going to talk about beginning in the next segment are going to start finding their way into IRAs, where a huge amount of retiree money is held. And there's a lot of problems that arise with divorce, with remarriage, and ultimately with death when it pertains to ERISA. And the beneficiary form has no bearing. It does have some bearing, a very little. It's the rules of ERISA that take effect. And one must understand the rules of ERISA when dealing with retirement accounts, but it may stretch to IRAs in the not too distant future, and that's why I want to talk about it today. Okay, when we come back, Chris is going to explain to you something different with our musical countdown because of a few emails and a few requests from listeners, how we're doing the What's New on HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com lead-in a little bit differently.
So we used to do it where we would take the top three songs from 40 years ago this week and do a little countdown as our lead-up to an update on what was new with my what was new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. We've changed it up a little bit. We're still going to tie it into Social Security, but what we're going to give you is a top song sample from the year Social Security was created, which is 1935. We're then going to give you the number one hit from 40 years ago,
like we've always done.
But then we're going to give you the number one hit from 35 years ago to kind of
tie into the
35 computational years. So we'll discuss that a little bit more when we come back. But this next, the first song coming up after we return from this short break, this composer is considered to be the greatest in American history. And for the version of this song, he teamed with the most famous dancer on film at the time. So that's your hint.
So
very interesting.
Is this from 1935?
1935, 80 years ago. So this will be reached back to Jim's childhood. So we'll be back right after the short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
I just got an invitation through the mails. Your presence requested this evening. It's formal, top hat, white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Not many people listening probably were around when that came out, but that is one of the top hits from 80 years ago, 1935, for those of you doing the math.
So did they have them rated, top number one, number two?
The problem is it's very difficult to find weekly top 10 records for 1935. Mm-hmm. They do exist, but not as readily available. So we have a list of lots of hits from 1935. We're just going to go through those in our lead up to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
And the reason we chose 1935, that's when Social Security first took effect.
Correct.
And with
the launch,
in,
we just had the exactly. 80th anniversary of 80th Social anniversary. Security.
Yeah. So what we're trying to tie in as we lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com is we're going to look back 80 years ago, 1935, when Social Security was first founded. 40 years ago, like we had been, which when it was first founded, the calculation to determine your benefit was based on a number they called 40 computation years.
Elapsed years.
That's what I meant. I was mm-hmm. testing you. Very good. Mm-hmm. So 40 elapsed years. Today, they use 35 computation years. So we're going to look back at 80 years ago, number one song 40 years ago, and the number one song 35 years ago. And this is going to accomplish a few things. Number one, which is the topic of the blog for this week, mm-hmm. We've caused some confusion amongst some of our listeners on 40 years. And mm-hmm. some listeners were thinking Social Security is only going to look back at your earnings over the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. So a gentleman wrote to us who was going to retire at 70. So he thought that was only going to look back to earnings from 30 on 40 years. And he, under his calculations, had made more money in his 20s than he did now. And he was worried that those higher earnings were not going to be calculated in.
You're kind of letting the cat out of the bag here, just so you know.
Right. So that's in radio, that's called a teaser.
Not when you just divulge the whole thing.
That's teasing them. They don't know the whole story.
Okay.
They're teased now.
By the way, that song.
Oh, yeah.
That
was it?
Irving Berlin's Top Hat, White Tails and Ties, performed by Fred Astaire for the 1935 movie Top Hat. Actually, one of my favorite movies.
I was very impressed by the clarity for a song from 80 years ago.
It was excellent.
There was no. I figured there was going to be a lot of, you know. Well, the
we're not playing them off of records.
Static
here.
From the records. So yeah. How did they? Did they? They obviously didn't have digital recordings back then, but the master tape.
The master
was
survived.
Clear.
Mm-hmm. It survived, and they've cleaned them up over time. I'm sure
clear.
It was remastered.
Yeah, it was. It certainly didn't improve Fred Astaire's singing ability, but...
he was mostly a melodic talker,
yes.
is what I call it.
Yeah.
Well, the song was pretty neat. Yeah, got me going. Everybody, we were snapping our feet.
Yeah, we were tapping our toes. And yeah. Jim was tempted to get up on the table and dance.
I was going to start swinging, yeah, but nice. I held back.
Okay. So where do we leave off?
Well, we're going to get back
ERISA,
into
ERISA yes. explosives.
Okay, so welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Jim Solney. I'm a certified financial planner in Fort Collins, Colorado. Seated to my left, who you can't see, but if you could, you would see a rather attractive man.
What?
Yeah, what? Chris Stein to my left, finest instructor at Colorado State University, and directly across from me, Peter Scott, Esquire, Your yes. Majesty, Your Highness.
I like Eminence now.
Eminence.
Yeah, His Eminence.
His Eminence.
Estate Planning Attorney Extraordinaire.
There we go.
How's that?
That's
okay.
Wonderful.
So put us all together, and you have the retirement and IRA show. And what we were trying to talk to you about is, yes, estate planning, but estate planning with beneficiary forms. And most people think, Peter, it's very easy. I'm going to fill in my beneficiary form. I'm going to name some people, and they're the ones who are going to inherit it. And what they don't know is that some of those accounts, not all, but some, are controlled by a law called ERISA. Right now, your life insurance, your annuity, your IRA is not controlled by ERISA. But your 401k, your pension, your 403, well, I'm not saying your 403b, some ERISA plans, some aren't. But most or many employer plans are ERISA protected and under ERISA rules. And that's where you start to fall into issues especially in cases of divorce, remarriage, and then death. Beneficiaries named on the beneficiary form can sometimes be removed by the government because of rules under ERISA. And they will superimpose different beneficiaries who the decedent may not have wanted to inherit the account. And it disinherits those who thought they were entitled to the account because they were named on it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. One of the things to understand with ERISA, though, and Chris will explain this, is ERISA has, because remember we said ERISA is going to protect, yes, the pension from the employer who may raid it, so to speak.
Or other things. Maybe it prevents them from shifting too much of the benefit to high-paid employers,
right, and
employees, and ignoring
right.
the working-class folks. So there's rules that require a certain balance there.
ERISA had it was founded with good intentions, but there's that saying, the law of unintended consequences, and that's what we're talking about. The people who are getting bit by ERISA, and it really wasn't that ERISA was intended to bite them; it just does.
You know, it's a shame that we didn't have ERISA protecting Social Security.
Yeah, then it would have kept the government from spending it.
Exactly.
But again, we mentioned ERISA exempted government-sponsored retirement accounts and pensions. They said the cost and rules of implementing it were too prohibitive to state and local governments, so they exempted them. But of course, they jammed it down the throat of private employers. But Chris, ERISA comes with one unique thing that says a certain person has to inherit your account within a certain period of time, no matter what you say.
By default, a spouse gets special treatment. So the spouse automatically becomes the beneficiary of the account as long as you're married, obviously, to become the spouse, for a certain period of time, not to exceed 1 year. And what that means is if you are already married and you join the plan, the default beneficiary is the spouse. If you marry while you're a participant of the plan, it may immediately entitle that person to be the beneficiary if the plan is written that way, or sometime within the next year, it must designate that spouse as the beneficiary, overriding other people that you might have already stated on the beneficiary designation form. So even though these accounts do have beneficiary designation forms, there's always kind of this the spousal override, I call it, off to the side that could step in and trump what you have stated on there. And it usually comes into an effect for people who are plan participants and then later on get married. And when they're participating in the 401k at work or another ERISA-based plan, you have got your beneficiary designation form filled out. Many people forget once they get married that things might change because of this spousal override.
And that's what we're going to talk about with the first case. Remember, under ERISA rules, a spouse must be the default beneficiary of an ERISA plan. If you are married already and enroll in the ERISA plan, it's a done deal. The spouse is automatically the beneficiary, no matter who you put down unless the spouse specifically signs a spousal waiver form. Mm-hmm. Spousal waiver forms cannot be created by an attorney. You must use the spousal waiver form of that plan. Every plan will have their own spousal waiver form. And you must use that spousal waiver form.
And this is why when you fill out that form, so you start to work for someplace and you look at that beneficiary that you're going to name, they ask you, is this your spouse? Or even, are you married? They want to know about this because they know about the spousal override. And they're not going to allow you to designate someone else if you have a spouse unless you bring the spousal waiver that's been legally signed by the spouse, waiving their claim to that retirement account.
And then in a case where you get married as all when you're already a participant in the plan, ERISA says a period of time no more than 1 year from the date of marriage, the plan must make the spouse the default beneficiary. So they give a little wiggle room there. Mm-hmm. And as we'll see, that's what has bit some people, is the wiggle room.
And a lot of the ERISA rules are like this. They set forth a standard that must be met, but the plan can do better than the standard. In this case, the better would be you don't have to wait the year. The plan could say, no, we're gonna make them the beneficiary immediately, or we'll make them the beneficiary after 6 months. They just can't wait beyond the 1 year limit. That's kind of how ERISA works with many of the rules.
Right.
They can provide greater benefits, just not less than the minimum requirement.
And here's the cautionary tale, people, because this first case is called Cajun Industries versus Kidda. And this involved the 401k. And it's a situation that happens fairly regularly. I mean, we all know we're given a one-way ticket to this ride we call life. And we all know how it ends. And what happened
not is... Not necessarily when, but the death rate is hovering around 100%.
Yes. The gentleman in case here was named Leonard Kidda. Leonard Kidder was married to Mrs. Leonard Kidder, and they had a wonderful life, and they had three children. And oddly, because it usually doesn't happen this way, usually the male dies first, Mrs. Kidder predeceased Leonard and passed away. So Leonard changed the beneficiaries of his 401k from Mrs. Kidder to his three children. And he named them all as primary beneficiaries, all inheriting proportional share of his 401k. Well, as time went on, many, many years passed since the passing of the first Mrs. Kidda. Leonard meets someone else and falls in love yet again and decides, I'm going to marry again. And Leonard does. He marries the second Mrs. Kidda. Remember, many, many years went past. The 401k grew to $400,000. Each child was going to inherit one-third. 6 weeks, though, after marrying, Mrs. Kidda, Leonard died.
That's too bad.
It was. 6 weeks, that was it. 6 weeks later...
They say marriage isn't dangerous.
I'm not saying that he died because he got married, and maybe he was ecstatic.
How many years did he live prior to that?
It doesn't say how old he was.
A lot. And 6 weeks in, boom.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't get married.
Well, maybe not to her. Maybe it was just her.
I'm sure the second Mrs. Kidda was nice, although it didn't end that way. Because what happened... Leonard dies 6 weeks after marrying the second Mrs. Kidda. Now, the children claimed, hey, Dad thought everything was fine. We were beneficiary of his 401k. Yeah. He always wanted us to have it.
Right.
That the dad, Mr. Leonard, had always talked openly with the second Mrs. Kidda that what's yours is yours, mine is mine.
They may even had a prenuptial agreement.
I don't know. It doesn't get into that.
They even could. Wouldn't it change the outcome?
Wouldn't have changed the outcome.
Right.
Now, when the death happened, the children were still named as beneficiaries. But Mrs. Kidda, too, said no. Cajun Industries had a provision Because remember, ERISA says the spouse must be the beneficiary. And ERISA gives plans up to 1 year to make the spouse default beneficiary.
Or said a little differently, when the employer is creating the plan, they have up to 12 months following the marriage to insert Mrs. Kidder as the beneficiary. So the employer can say, as Jim, you mentioned a little while ago, Kidder Industries could have said, upon marriage, Mrs. Kidder becomes the beneficiary, or they could say 6 months after the marriage, if Mr. Kidder doesn't name her as a beneficiary, she automatically becomes the beneficiary, or up to 12 months.
Exactly. In the case of Cajun Industries, they said immediate.
Hmm. So now, she was the beneficiary the moment they got married.
The moment, the second she said, I do, it was hers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as Pete just alluded to and stated very eloquently, the plan decides, ERISA simply says, you choose. We're going to give you between immediate and 365 days. And the plan has to choose. Well, Cajun Industries chose immediate. So the children fought it. The children took it to court and fought it all the way.
Yeah, because they'd only
up.
Been married for 6 weeks.
6 weeks. And the children claimed their father told them it was theirs. The asset, that just because he's marrying again, what's hers is hers, what's mine is mine. You children are getting it. The courts at the district court, the other court, I mean, they just kept writing it up. I don't know how many courts it went up. The courts ruled, and the final court, it doesn't have here who the final court. I'm not sure if this one went to the Supreme Court or just, what's below
court
the Supreme
Court? Court of Appeals.
The Court of Appeals.
Or sometimes in the federal system, sometimes called the Circuit Court.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it went to the Circuit Court level or the Supreme Court level. But all the courts consistently ruled in favor of the new spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And she got all $400,000. The kids got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Mr. Kidder isn't here to say definitively if that's what he would have wanted. According to the children, it's what he would have wanted. But, of course, we don't have his point of view.
Usually the argument by the courts is that he had, especially when there's 6 weeks that went by, he had every opportunity to handle this in that 6 weeks, and we aren't going to second guess and assume that this isn't what he wanted.
Right.
Even though he didn't verbalize it to the kids, he may very well have intended.
But also under ERISA, it's a done deal. Mm-hmm. ERISA said it must be anywhere between one day and 365 days.
But he could have, you know, pursued to get the spousal waiver, get her to sign off on, and if the agreement was hers is hers, his is his.
The point there, too, is we talked about it going into this segment that maybe, and we don't know this, but even if Mr. Kidder and Mrs. Kidder, too, entered into a prenuptial agreement that, as Jim says, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, and we have the ability to leave that to our children from our prior marriages, that would not have controlled because Mrs. Kidder, too, did not sign a waiver. And without the signing of the waiver, the default rules under ERISA override everything.
Even the prenup. So,
exactly.
So people out there might be saying, oh, they were dumb. They should have done a prenup if that was really the understanding. Even a prenup wouldn't have solved this problem. The outcome would have been the same.
Because only a spouse can waive the rights.
And in addition to that, as you guys mentioned earlier, Mrs. Kidder, too, signed, assuming this happened, signed the prenuptial agreement. That is not a waiver because it's not on the form generated by the 401k for the waiver.
And she's not a spouse.
And she wasn't a spouse.
So she can't sign a spousal waiver.
as a prenup.
Right.
But even if it had the provisions in there that she would go ahead and sign later, which very often you see in these, the fact that she didn't sign didn't determine or change the outcome, or wouldn't have, I guess I should say.
And the cautionary tale in this, listeners, is if you are in a blended marriage situation, which many people are, and you're divorced and you have remarried, and you have the old what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine, and you think, okay, no problem. My 401k or my pension, I've got my children named. If the spouse hasn't signed a spousal waiver, it does not matter who is on that account as beneficiary. If it is an ERISA plan, and we don't know because every plan is different, But at a point no less than 1 year after marriage, that spouse becomes automatic beneficiary. And it could happen even sooner. In the case of Cajun Industries, it was immediate. As soon as that second Mrs. Kidda said, I do, if Mr. Kidda all of a sudden had a heart attack right there on the altar, she would have got it. Because it said immediate. So it's very important in the case of blended families, listeners, you understand these rules. And if you are going to change a beneficiary, if you're going to essentially disinherit your new spouse from inheriting your employer retirement plan, you best do it with a spousal waiver, not a prenup. That doesn't work because you're not a spouse yet, hence the name prenuptial. It's before you got married.
Before you got nupped.
Before you got nupped.
But you could, even in a post-nuptial agreement.
It still won't work.
Still won't work.
It's got to be the spousal waiver official
right.
document.
And that, there's been cases on that. Spouses have signed away their rights to retirement accounts in a post-nuptial. You don't hear much about post-nups. These are signed after you're married, saying, hey, this is what happens to your stuff. This is what happens to my stuff. If a spouse waives it in a post-nup, even though they're now married, ERISA says no. You must use the spousal waiver form of the ERISA plan, not a post-nup. There's been cases where those were thrown out. You have to use the ERISA form.
And let me take a, I'd like just for a moment, let's turn that around 180 degrees. And let's assume that Mr. Kidder, instead of his wife dying, divorced.
After 6 weeks?
Mrs. Kidder number one, or Mrs. Kidder number two, it doesn't really matter. But let's use Mrs. Kidder number one, divorces Mrs. Kidder number one. And the divorce court says Mrs. Kidder, number one, gets part of his 401k. He promptly dies after that without implementing any of that. And at that point, Mrs. Kidder, under ERISA, gets the entire benefit because she is the beneficiary under ERISA during the marriage. That beneficiary designation was not changed post-marriage, even though state law may provide that a divorce terminates the spouse's rights to IRAs and other accounts. Under ERISA, it does not. So if someone has gotten a divorce and they haven't taken the second step with their ERISA plan to change the beneficiary, the former spouse is still the beneficiary under the law.
And it gets very messy.
I agree, Peter.
So what we're trying to get you to understand, listeners, is in the case of marriage, divorce, remarriage, and children, you have to pay attention to these laws. Just because you have a beneficiary named on the form does not mean that's the person or persons who will inherit it. And that brings us to our second case. Now, it has a very similar, it's got a lot of similarities to the Kidda case.
No kidding.
No kidding.
You're such a Kidda.
So in the Kidda case, we had a plan that says immediately upon marriage. Remember, ERISA says up to 365 days, okay? Has a very short marriage and then a death and children. We have the same case, except this case is Kern versus Chrysler. Kern is Mary Kern. Mary Kern married Mr. Kern.
That's probably how she became a Kern.
True.
Kernel of truth.
Could have been a coincidence that they both
There's a kernel of truth to that, yes.
Wow.
We're on a roll today.
We are. This is the comedy show for sure, people. Okay, so what happens in the case of Kern and Chrysler? Mary Kern married Mr. Kern. I don't have his name here in front of me, his first name, but his last name was Kern, hence the Mary Kern. Right. George Kern. So George worked for Chrysler. George was single at the time when he married Mrs. Kern.
That's good. That's usually goes flies better
that's
in the face of the law.
That complies with the law, yeah. Okay. So that's good.
So he worked for Chrysler for a very long time and had amassed quite a nice pension benefit.
Good for George.
And he marries Mary. And 4 months after marrying Mary, he dies.
Once again, an example of long, healthy life as a single.
And then, boom, marriage just cut it short.
4 months later.
That's why I'm still single. I'm worried I'm going to die if I marry.
Could be.
So when we come back, I'm going to tell you, think about this for a minute now, people. on some of the things we shared with you.
4 months is longer than 6 weeks.
Four months is longer than 6 weeks. Remember what ERISA says, spouse must be the beneficiary. Did Chrysler give Mary Kern the pension or not? Remember, Mary married Mr. Kern. Mm-hmm. They were happily married, blissfully married for 4 months, and Mr. Kern dropped
dead.
Couldn't
have been too blissful. He keeled over.
Maybe it ended that way.
Maybe.
Maybe
you're
ended
so optimistic.
In a passionate bed.
Yes.
Or a little romp. Kind of the way I want to go.
This is the family show.
But anyways, so Mr. Kern passes away. Mary Kern applies for the Chrysler pension under ERISA because Mr. Kern never changed the beneficiary form and named her as beneficiary.
Yeah, but she was the spouse.
Yeah. So she said to Chrysler, hey, under ERISA, I, as the spouse, am entitled to my deceased husband's pension. We'll come back. We're going to lead in with the number two song in America. Chris is going to give us the hint.
No, we're
number
not.
Number two? No?
The number one song 40 years
confused.
Ago this week.
Number one, that's right. We're doing something new. Number one song 40 years ago this week, we're going to lead in.
Yep.
And we're also going to explain to you what happened with Kern versus Chrysler.
Excellent. So right after this short break, we're going to hear the number one song for this week in 1975. It features a popular sibling group whose first singing group was called the Rattlesnakes. These hints are getting better. I like that hint. So this is the Retirement IRA Show. We'll continue on with maybe we'll call this show ERISA Nightmares and or a cautionary tale that rhymes with ERISA. And we'll be back after this short break here on the Retirement IRA Show. Back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song 40 years ago this week, so 1975, this week in August. Nice summer song, probably, in 1975.
Yep.
Driving around in your Ford Fairlane with the windows down.
Yep.
I don't know. What car did you have in 1975, Jim?
None.
So you're walking down
12.
The street with the cassette tape player on your shoulder?
I was 12.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I wasn't walking down the street with a cassette.
See, this is my part of this. I just something about this part I like.
Okay.
I don't know why. So that is
as
Jive
I predicted,
by...
that song is going to stay number one, and I think the Bee Gees are going to stay in the countdown for quite some time because that was from that Saturday Night Fever, and that was a big movie back in '75.
It was.
Did that come out before or after Jaws? Because Jaws was pretty darn big too.
I think
before. When did Jaws come out?
I think it was before Jaws. I think Jaws was later in the 70s.
I'm going to Google that.
Well, this is the Retirement IRA Show, so that is a burning question that must be answered. When was Jaws released?
Oh, you're going to try to beat me, huh?
As we watch on
how do you spell
radio,
release?
These guys.
How do you, 1975. It was the summer of 1975.
June.
Yep. Very nice. So this was simultaneously.
Yes.
So this is a song maybe to cheer you up a little bit after you went to see Jaws. Because after I will tell you, in 1975, what was I? I was eight. What? No.
Apparently.
I was eight.
My goodness.
I was eight in 1975.
I was 12.
I was a delinquent, apparently, because the story I'm about to tell, I'm shocked that I did this. Well, and hopefully my parents aren't listening. Although at this age. That was the very first R-rated movie that... actually, it's rated PG.
Wasn't it R back then? No, it was PG.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I knew I wasn't allowed to go see it, but I went anyway.
Maybe it was PG-9.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was, but I was not allowed to go see it.
There was no nudity in it. It was just people being eaten.
Just blood and guts.
That was a disturbing show, and I couldn't swim in an open body of water for years.
It was the song.
Oh, yeah. The
theme.
Yeah. Do-do.
Do-do-do-do.
Mm-hmm. That Saturday Night Live made even more famous.
Yeah.
Landshark.
Landshark.
But we date ourselves.
Yes. And that was with the gumbo guy.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name?
The gumbo guy?
Forrest Gump.
No, Gumby.
Oh, Gumby, yeah. Mr. Bill's what you're thinking.
Oh, Mr. Bill, yeah, Mr. Bill.
Landshark didn't have anything to do with Gumby.
I made a mistake.
Oh.
But the older Saturday Night Live,
yes,
I'm talking.
Same era with Gumby and
Mr.
Bill.
Oh,
no.
Yes, yeah. Landshark.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, knocking on the door.
No, Landshark.
FedEx.
Oh, okay. No, I got it. What are we talking about now?
Ah, we're getting back to.
You had the teaser. We want to know if Mary Kern.
Well, wait a minute.
Mrs. Kern.
Before we do this, for people who don't know, we led in with the number one song in America 40 mm-hmm. years ago. This mm-hmm. is our new kind of format mm-hmm. as we lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Mm-hmm.
That's in response to unprecedented pressure to make an adjustment.
There was really just one person that complained. Oh, there were three people?
Three. Okay. Well, there was one guy who was a little confused. And one person who complained, and then certain people in the office who wanted to get out of the 70s as well.
Who shall remain nameless, but primarily one.
Okay.
Correct.
Three is plenty.
I won't point to sitting to the left of me.
The majority of the listening public is voting for not 40 years. Okay.
So
it's not bad. Most
doing,
of the music is not
instead,
bad.
So we're going to do a song from when Social Security was first created mm-hmm. in 1935, mm-hmm. a song from 40 years ago, which we just did, the number one song in America 40 years ago, because when Social Security first started, the calculation was based on 40 elapsed mm-hmm. years.
Even today it is.
Even today it is in a roundabout way. Mm-hmm. But now today they also pay much more attention to what they call 35 computation years. And they take the top 35 years of your salary, no matter when you earn them, as this week's helpwithmysocialsecurity.com blog post will explain. So that's why we are now looking back 35, 40, and 80 years ago as we lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
Which will come in the next segment.
Correct. As far as today's show, we're trying to get people, especially people who have blended families, who are divorced and remarried mm-hmm. or in divorced with children, what to know and do when it comes to ERISA and remarriage. In other words, how can you be sure your new spouse might get a benefit, and how can you be sure your kids may get a benefit and your new spouse doesn't? Depends what your particular situation is. We also want to let people know, because we always forget to do this, we love what we do. Pete, myself, and Chris, we do this more so out of a passion, I would say, for me anyways. Mm-hmm. I love what I do. And Pete, I think you will enjoy. You've been doing it longer than I have. And we just enjoy teaching. We enjoy helping people. And because of that, Chris, we get so excited, we forget to give people our contact info. Now, we're supposed to have some pre-made commercials, not necessarily commercials, but public service announcements, letting people know all this. Mm-hmm. But I simply want to give our phone number out, if you don't mind.
Feel free.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you want to contact us, if you have any questions about retirement, IRA, Social Security, PARA if you're in the Colorado PARA program, your TSP if you're in the federal program.
Hiking.
Yes, if you want. I did Black Lake last week, beautiful hike. So if you want mm-hmm. some hiking information, mm-hmm. you can come into the office. I offer what is called a coffee and a second opinion. And in that meeting, it doesn't cost anything. That is probably about the only complimentary meeting that we do. Other than that, we do charge for our time in my firm. But you're more than welcome to come in and talk to us about any specific questions you may have. Maybe you have some beneficiary forms and some accounts, and you just want to make sure the people you named on those forms actually inherit your assets. So if you have any questions on that or optimizing your Social Security or just IRAs and retirement in general, you're more than welcome to schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion. We call that because that's exactly what it is. We're going to sit in my office, we're going to drink a cup of coffee, and we're going to chat. And we do have that little Keurig coffee maker with dozens mm-hmm. of different flavors. So pretty much whatever type of coffee you like, we probably have a Keurig pod for that. So if you want to do that, you simply visit my website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and all the info for contacting us is there. And those of you who are off of iTunes, we offer this service no matter what state you live in. However, We cannot give you a cup of coffee. Obviously, if you're sitting in, say, New Jersey, and we're in Colorado, very difficult for us to actually make the coffee for you. Now, if you need instructions, we'll walk you through coffee making. And if you have a Keurig, I'll actually mail you a pod if you'd like, and then you can make your own coffee right there. But short of the actual coffee, we can meet with people, quote-unquote, anywhere in the nation.
Excellent.
Okay. And Pete, how about yourself?
Well, they can contact – well, first of all, the law firm that I work with is Cohen, Payton, and Payne, and we have offices in Greeley and Fort Collins and Denver. You can reach me at the Greeley office at 970-339-3500, 970-339-3500, or at the website peterscotthelps.com. That's PeterScottHelps.com. You can also reach me through the jimhelps.com site, or you can call directly. So whatever way you want, we do offer coffee, not the wide array and selection that Jim offers. And we're limited in our geographic area since I'm licensed in Colorado but not New Jersey. So we can't help. But we have colleagues around the country that we'd be happy to refer you to. And we offer, in addition to a second opinion, we can even offer a first opinion for those who care to meet with us on a free initial consultation, which we offer as well. So,
which I want to throw kudos out again to that. I'm currently working with an attorney, and I'll share with our listeners what's going on, but it has to do with my remodel from Heck and my cooktop story, which I have good news on, by the way.
Oh, good.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, we'll share that with our listeners. But I had to hire an attorney to get all this done. And I have found, Pete, y'all charge for every little thing for the most part. I couldn't believe. There was actually a line item on there paying him to research the law. And I thought, you're an attorney. Why do I have to pay you to research the law? You should know it. But anyways, you all charge for a lot. But yes. I am very impressed that
they have certain skills that have value.
That would be like me charging, oh, gee, let me charge you for researching how an IRA works. What?
Maybe you do in just a hidden fashion. You charge for your expertise. It's all kind of part of the bundle.
Yeah, but
you just don't line item it like attorneys do.
No, I was amazed at the bill. It was the first time I ever received an attorney bill next to yours.
Very detailed.
I hired Pete years ago, but...
It's always important to ask how they bill for phone calls, too.
Oh, my
Lord. It's usually
in
6-second
increments.
Every
little thing. Mm-hmm. I talked to you on this day. I did this on that day. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy moly. This
well, because if you just get a blank bill, you're like, oh, you couldn't possibly have done enough for that.
It's
justifying the bill.
But he's an attorney, so I can complain about his bill.
You can't. I don't think we should complain about attorneys right in front of Peter.
Yeah. Behind my back would be better.
Yeah.
Turn around. I'm giving kudos to him.
Oh.
Because what I like about Pete and Pete's firm is that you are willing to meet with people for the initial meeting. And I know you're not going to do a full estate plan for someone, but answer their questions without the clock ticking and just give them the direction they need. And if they want to hire you, great. And hopefully they would if they're looking to hire an attorney. But I do want our listeners to know that a lot of financial advisors, and Chris and I have talked about this before, heck, there's advisors out there who claim that for free they're going to do a whole retirement plan for you. You know and I know it's bogus. They're just trying to get someone in there, Pete, so they'll sell them something. Mm-hmm. Most of them are looking to sell a client some annuity or something like that. But it's not unheard of for advisors, financial advisors, to meet with someone for a quote-unquote free meeting. Heck, there's advisors out there whose whole business model is based on buying allegedly free dinners for people. Hey, I'm going to feed you for free and educate you for free. But that's hopefully people realize that those advisors are scam artists. Most attorneys will charge for their time, but you are willing to meet people and not charge for that first initial meeting. So I do want to throw kudos out there. I really like that.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Okay. So if anybody wants to contact
Pete.
Mm-hmm. You can contact Pete. You can also reach Pete, in case you didn't miss everything he said, right from my website, jimhelps.com. Click the Meet the Team button, and we have a little link to Pete's website right from there, and you can get on there. Okay, so on to bigger and better things. Let's get back to Mary Kern and Chrysler. This is very similar to the first case we talked about in the previous segment, Kidde versus Cajun Industries. We have a woman marrying later in life another gentleman who died shortly thereafter. Now, Chris is equating the actual act of marriage as causing the death of the man.
So he lingered.
Not necessarily.
You've implied it repeatedly.
I'm just saying the people they connected themselves with may not have been as supportive and calming an influence as they'd hoped, and instead drove them to death.
Spoken like a true married man.
Oh, I don't have one of those. Mine is very supportive and calming, and if anything, lengthens my
Why
life.
Why are you saying that with your fingers crossed?
Jim, don't get me in trouble here.
Okay, so what we have is Mary Kern married a gentleman, Mr. Kern, and 4 months later, Mr. Kern passed away. Mr. Kern had never updated the beneficiary form of his Chrysler pension to name Mary. In fact, he was a bachelor prior to that, so he had nobody named as beneficiary of his pension plan. Nobody, nada, zilch. Mm-hmm.
And in that case, as a side note, the beneficiary or the recipient of those funds after he passed would then be defined by the plan documents that say, in the event no beneficiary is available, it's going to go to this person and then this person and this person. So you might be wondering, well, where's the money going to go? There is built into the plan, there's a default.
True, but this was a little different case because it was a pension, an income pension.
Oh, so it might just shut off and they get nothing.
Just goes away.
Yeah, yeah, okay. If that's
correct.
What it was, not
just
a...
goes
but
away.
If it was a 401k, for instance,
401k, totally
little different,
different
thing.
Exactly.
It'd be like what I described.
Not in the case of the pension.
Right.
That's that was the mortality credit that makes pensions work.
Right, and that's why they can afford to pay people who live an excessively long time is they get to keep the money that would have gone to someone when
correct.
They die early. So that's absolutely true. But
so in this particular case, Mary says to Chrysler, no, under ERISA rules, the spouse must be beneficiary of an ERISA plan. Mm-hmm. A pension is an ERISA plan. Well, remember what we said in the previous segment, people. ERISA said the spouse must be the default beneficiary and the plan must put in place a mechanism for naming the spouse as beneficiary in a period of time not to exceed 1 year. Chrysler Pension said the spouse is beneficiary after 1 year.
Hmm. So they comply with the ERISA rule because that's 1 year is not longer than 1 year.
Correct.
But for poor Mary, she wasn't considered the beneficiary after only 4 months.
And she fought it and she lost. Now, what is unique is if both companies had just switched their rules, if Cajun Industry, which gave a $400,000 401k to a spouse who was married to the guy for just 6 weeks, because they had the immediate rule, I guess you could say, that the spouse is immediately beneficiary. If the Chrysler Pension had the immediate rule and Cajun Industry had the 1 year rule, both of these spouses would have got their respective inheritances.
Well, the plaintiffs in the first case weren't the spouse.
No,
the
it
kids.
Was the children.
The kids would have gotten it, which is apparently what the person wanted, if you trust the kids. And in the second case, Mary would have received benefits instead of nobody essentially receiving benefits. The plan was the benefit because those monies rolled back into the plan rather than being distributed to you
right.
or your spouse.
So in this particular case, both particular cases, who we have to assume the decedents would have wanted to inherit the account never inherited it because of ERISA rules. So it's very important, people. If you have an employer-sponsored plan, you probably have an ERISA plan unless the employer is a government. Then you probably don't have an ERISA plan and you have a different set of rules. But if you do have a private employer, and you do have a spouse or a second spouse, you may want to pay strong attention, close attention, to your beneficiary form and the rules of that plan, especially if you're remarrying. I know people like to think, oh, I'm not going to die, I'm healthy, but things happen. Which brings us to our third case. This is a really unique case because it involves a mother and daughter.
The plot thickens.
The plot thickens.
Dun, dun, dun.
We need to have a song like that.
We need to
don't,
have something.
You don't have to look
I don't
it
think
up.
I have anything that makes that sound.
No, but we need that. Other
than yourself, of course.
Right. I can just,
and you do it
I can just
well
spontaneously.
There we go.
Okay. Trying to pull up the case here so we all can see it.
This is radio. They're not going to be able to see it, Jim.
No, true. Okay.
Actually, we're waiting for you to do that, I do have appropriate music.
Okay.
Too bad my volume is turned down.
That's not appropriate music. I have it. It's right here.
We're waiting for you.
And your question is, Jim?
Yeah.
I don't have a question. Okay, so let's get to Kennedy v. DuPont. V means?
Versus.
Does it?
Yes.
Would that be VS? Yeah.
It is sometimes. Sometimes it's just, it's just.
They save on ink if they just use the V.
Okay. This is another $400,000 401k. Actually, it was a savings incentive plan, SIP plan. Some people out there will have an SIP plan. Kodak, a local employer, had an SIP plan, savings incentive plan. Okay. So very similar to a 401k. Kennedy versus DuPont. Mm. The DuPont. Mm. We've all heard of the DuPont Corporation.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So here's what happens.
Yes.
It's very dramatic. Is that a dramatic pause?
I'm on the edge of my chair.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. Okay. So what had happened is Bill Kennedy was a participant in the DuPont Savings Incentive Plan, SIP plan. He was married to his wife, Liv. Would you pronounce L-I-V, Liv?
Yes.
Liv.
Okay. Like Livia. Olivia, probably.
No, it's just Liv.
Yeah, but
probably a short
version. Same version of Olivia. But it could be Liv, like Liv Tyler is a, that's her name.
Yeah.
It's not short for Olivia. Her name is actually Liv.
The given name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like Ted. You can be named Ted legally, but you didn't have to be Theodore.
You could be Edward.
Mm-hmm. And you could be Jim.
Are we done?
Mm-hmm. You're not. You're James. But they could have legally anointed you as Jim.
Or even Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. I knew someone whose legal name was Timmy.
God. Can
seriously
we get on?
Which was cute when they were a baby, but now as a grown man, legally his name's Timmy, which is, you know, it just.
Well, the name is Liv. It's not short for anything. The woman was named Liv. Why, I have no idea. But Liv was the mother of Kara.
Karen?
Kara?
Kara, K-A-R-A.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that pertinent to this story?
Well, it kind of is a little pertinent because it's a mother and daughter fighting.
Oh, they're fighting, which mothers and daughters tend to do.
Yes, they do.
Being around a lot of mother-daughter pairings in my home.
Okay, so here's what happened. William Kennedy was married to Liv, and everything didn't go well. Didn't kill him.
Mm.
Didn't die, but they got divorced. During the divorce, or as a result of the divorce, let's put it that way, no quadro was issued to separate the SIP plan.
Mm. So let's explain that.
Yes.
Pete?
Well, qualified domestic relations order.
Pronounce quadro.
Q-D-R-O, and we in the industry pronounce it quadro.
That's
even
right.
There's no U in there or an A.
Yeah.
But so, it's hard to pronounce QD.
It is.
Quadro.
Quadro.
Yeah.
Sounds like Australian pronunciation of it. So anyway, it's a specific order permitted by ERISA that will allow, if the court enters it and it's properly signed and enters an order of the court, will divide up the plans under ERISA between the two divorcing spouses.
Mm-hmm. So these are very common, actually, because
okay,
there's a lot of divorces that involve someone who has an ERISA plan at work, and that's how they split it up.
Perfect. Okay, so a quadro is what splits essentially an ERISA plan. Mm-hmm. It is actually an order from the court, hence the name, Qualified Domestic Relation Order. Okay, so William is married to Liv. They have Kara. William and Liv don't get along. They divorce. As part of the divorce decree awarded William and simultaneously, that means at the same time, divested his ex Liv of all claims related to Bill's pension plans. That's what the divorce decree stated. That Liv was divested.
She has no claim on.
Correct, according to the divorce decree. The problem, you can probably see where this is going, Pete.
I can, yes.
William never removed Liv from the beneficiary form of the SIP plan. The SIP plan that is controlled by ERISA. ERISA plans have to be separated via a quadro, not a divorce decree. A divorce decree will separate an IRA. Why? An IRA is not regulated by ERISA. So they put together a divorce decree that simultaneously of signing it gave, according to the decree, all rights to Bill's pension plans to Bill and divested Liv of all claims to them. The problem is Mr. Kennedy never, ever removed her from the beneficiary form itself. In 2001, this is an old court case, in 2001, Bill died. And we'll get back now and figure out who got the $400,000 SIP plan. Was it the daughter, Kara, who claimed her father? And by the way, the father left all assets to Kara. Everything in his will to Kara. Nothing to Liv. Who got the 401k? Kara, who according to the divorce decree had the right to it, or Liv, who was on the beneficiary form?
The plot thickens once again. So this is the Retirement IRA Show. We've got one more break before the fourth segment here. When we come back after this break, we're going to hear the number one song from 1980, 35 years ago. So the hint is, the number one song from 1980 this week features a popular young Australian songstress who is no stranger to the top 10 scene.
Is she hot?
I think so.
Jim's girlfriend.
It could be Olivia Newton-John again.
It could be, yeah. So Jim's all excited.
So we'll solve this riddle when we get back here after the break on Retirement and IRA Show. Welcome back to the final segment on the Retirement and IRA Show. We came back here with the number one song from this week in 1980. It's in the summer of 1980. It was very magical. Jim, can you name the songstress from Australia?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Olivia Newton-John.
That is exactly correct. Any guess on the name of the song?
Well, it's got, I heard the chorus there. It's got to be magic, something magic.
It's just magic. Straight up magic.
Wow.
Very nice job, Pete.
That was a wild guess.
Well, sometimes those work out. Yeah. So, we got a nice mix today of music. We had 1935, we had 1975, 1980. Hopefully pleasing most everyone who might be listening to the show.
Hopefully. Okay, why don't we...
So, by the way, this song became Newton-John's biggest adult contemporary hit to date and ended up the year as the third most popular single of 1980 behind Call Me by Blondie and Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 by Pink Floyd.
Interesting.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed that as her biggest.
Biggest to that date, there might have been something after this.
There is adult, biggest adult hit, so maybe it doesn't exceed her.
Well, and she had some country chart stuff earlier, too, that might have been pretty big. But anyway, she had a lot of popular songs.
Yeah.
And she's very popular with Jim.
Yes. She is. Mm-hmm. She's kind of cute. Okay, yep. So we do all this to lead in what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So let's lead into that. Before we jump back into Kennedy versus DuPont, because this is an important case that can impact a lot of people, because all too often people confuse a divorce decree and the separation of assets and think it applies to all accounts.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com
is the reason why we're doing music.
The reason why we do all this music is a connection to Social Security. 80 years ago, that's when it started. 40 years ago, that refers to 40 elapsed years. 35 years ago refers to the fact that they used 35 computational years in their calculation for your benefits, retirement benefits specifically. So we received a question recently about 40 elapsed years versus computation years. What is the difference, and how do they relate to one another? So the question essentially was, and I'm not going to read the whole answer here, but the question was, quote, I know that Social Security uses the 35 highest inflation-factored years to determine a worker's Social Security retirement payment, but I'm confused about the, quote, past 40 years, unquote, that you talk about. Does this mean the Social Security calculation does not take into account earnings from 41 years ago? Well, the answer is yes, they do, because the 40 years was just a stepping stone to get to the 35 years. By the regulation, essentially, Social Security starts with the 40 elapsed years, which they determined, and this is the essence or the root of where the 40 years comes from. They determined when they were designing the system that a typical work career would be about 40 years. From age 22 to 62 is kind of how they defined it. They said that's typically for most people their career years. So let's start there. But let's not use all 40 years. Let's give people the benefit of the fact that maybe there's some years they don't work or some down years they're partially or unemployed. So let's take into consideration for calculation purposes 5 years less than that, which gets us to 35. So that's how elapsed years versus computational years relate. It's actually the 40 elapsed years that drive the 35, because the rule is it's 5 years less than the elapsed years is your computational years. So there's where the 35 comes in, and that's the 35 is the important part. 35 years, but it's not the most recent 35 or the 35 starting when you're age 22. It's actually from birth. They look at all of your earnings, they adjust them all for inflation to kind of put them all on an even playing field, and then they go through and pick out the 35 best years, and that's what goes into the calculation for determining your retirement benefit. So if you want a little more detail, go into it a little more extensively on the blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, but that's the topic for this week. Any questions, Jim?
No, I think you did a fine job.
What's new, pussycat?
Now we can get back to
Kara
and Liv and Marcus. I don't know. What was the husband?
Bill. Yes. Bill.
I don't know. Bill, whatever.
Marcus.
I don't know.
Is that like Spartacus?
No. But we could call him Spartacus. I don't think his name is relevant to the story.
Well, Bill. William. Okay, so remember, Millie? People, what we have here, a little different situation than the prior two. Here's a situation where a husband and wife were married and got divorced. That happens with all too familiarity and regularity in this nation. So we have a husband and wife divorcing. The wife waives all rights to the pension plans, plural, of the husband in the divorce decree. Waives all rights, but they never do a quadro, which kind of makes a little bit of sense because they weren't separating the SIP plan.
Right.
The gentleman had an employer-sponsored plan at DuPont called SIP. It's like a 401k. He had an SIP plan. They weren't separating it. He never wanted to give his ex any. So the divorce decree was just the ex saying, look, I hereby waive all my rights to my husband's retirement plans. I don't want any. Because they weren't physically separating the SIP plan and giving Liv any, there was no need for a quadro.
Right.
So the divorce decree separates everything. The problem is William passes away, but never changed the beneficiary of his SIP plan from Liv to Kara. But in his will, he gave everything to Kara, nothing to his wife, Liv.
Ex-wife,
Liv, mm-hmm. Nothing. Well, the plan does not give the assets to Kara. The plan gave the assets to the named beneficiary.
Because that's the contract that they had with Bill.
Exactly. Who is Liv. And they gave it to Liv. In this case, ERISA didn't technically kick in yet because they were divorced. There was no spouse. It's not like Kara was a new spouse. Kara was his daughter. Mm-hmm. ERISA does not protect non-spouse beneficiaries, Pete.
That's right.
It protects spousal beneficiaries. So the plan said, look, Kara, your father may have given you all his assets. Your mom may have waived her rights to all your father's pension plans in a divorce decree. But ERISA, or at least this plan, does not recognize divorce decrees. And we therefore are giving the assets to the named beneficiary. And they did. They actually paid out the $400,000 to Liv. Kara sues DuPont.
Sure.
And that, to me, and I'm going to explain in a minute, was Kara's biggest mistake, or Kara's attorney's biggest mistake. They sued the wrong person or the wrong entity.
Right.
So Kara goes after DuPont and sues. And initially, she did okay in the courts because the Texas District Court agreed with Kara. Mm-hmm. The Texas District Court ruled initially against the DuPont SIP plan. Remember, Kara didn't go after Liv, the mom, and get the $400,000. Kara went after DuPont saying you should have never given it to her. The District Court said yes. Your wife, your mom or Liv waived her rights under the divorce decree, and therefore the beneficiary form should be surpassed or usurped. Is that the word? Usurped?
Usurped or voided.
Voided. And instead the money should have gone to Liv. Well, excuse me, to Kara. So the plan appeals to the Texas Court of Appeals. And they switched it. They said, no, the district court was wrong. That the divorce decree has no bearing in this case. The beneficiary form does. And essentially, I'm given the real brief Reader's Digest version of their opinion, that the beneficiary form trumps all. So it get appealed yet again, this time by Kara, to none other than the U.S. Supreme Court, who ruled in favor of the plan. The plan said a divorce decree. And in fact, the United States solicitor provided, what do you call it, amicus brief?
Yes.
And said, we're not taking, we are doing this in support of neither party. But they were trying to make a point. And the point is, they said a divorce decree does not take precedence over an ERISA plan. And the beneficiary form has to trump all. And the Supreme Court agreed. Here's where I'm saying that I feel Kara got bad legal representation. Because Liv took all the money, moved to Norway, spent it all, and died.
Oh, so Liv was from Norway.
So there was nothing left.
You left that out earlier. We could have opined on the name Liv even to greater certainty if we'd have known that.
Yeah. Oh, is Liv Norwegian?
Yes.
Oh, well, there you have it. She's Norwegian. She went to Norway, lived it up, spent it all, and died. Kara.
How do you live it up in Norway?
Well, if your name's Liv, you can do that.
Oh, okay.
Can I get on?
Actually,
there's a lot of places I might go to splurge, blow 400 grand. I'm not sure. Norway's a beautiful country, but I'm not sure that's where I'd go to.
Anyways, the 400 Bali grand goes with Liv to Norway. Yes. She blows it all. She dies.
Yeah.
My point is this, and Ed Slott had this. Actually, it's Ed's point because I would have never thought of this on my own. Ed said the mistake was suing the SIP plan, suing DuPont's SIP plan. The money was already distributed. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do, sue and try to get more money from the plan? You should have went after the ex who had waived. At that point, you sue and you say, okay, you got the money. That is okay. But you waived your right to it.
It's called unjust enrichment. Mm-hmm. So, yes, Kara could have sued. But here's the other side of that. How enthusiastic do you think Kara was about suing her mother?
I don't know.
Apparently not very. Yeah, apparently that was a consideration.
My guess is if this thing wound all the way to the Supreme Court, someone along the line probably suggested we need to go after the person holding the money.
And she was not prohibited from doing that, having sued DuPont. She could always have initiated that suit.
Although I can't imagine she's very close with her mother if her mother took the money that clearly was intended for her and moved out of the country and blew it.
Well, Blewett is, I don't know if that's in the
used
opinion.
Used it up.
Yes. But here's the other side of that, too, is that mom and daughter may have been okay, had a good relationship. Daughter didn't want to sue mom. Mom didn't want to get sued and said, well, if you can get it from DuPont, go for it. I'll support you, but, don't be taking money from me. And Kara's saying, well, I really don't want to take it from my mom. I want to maintain that relationship.
I don't know, based on other parts of the story that I have read, that they had a close relationship.
Okay.
So I don't think it was that.
Okay.
And, again, it's just a case, though, where people need to understand, and Pete, you, in being the attorney, can expand upon this, that certain assets in divorce go, certain assets don't go. And divorce decrees do not trump a beneficiary form.
Yes, and the divorce decrees are created by state law. They do not impact federal law and can't override federal law if the law is to the contrary. And that's why the Court of Appeals and then Texas Court of Appeals and thus the Supreme Court affirming the Court of Appeals held for the application of ERISA. And a lot of people think that when they get divorced, it's in the divorce decree. And here there would have been no reason for a quadro. It didn't apply
because
there was no division. And the fault really lies with Bill for not going back and changing that. Every state that I'm aware of, certainly Colorado, has a statute that says, and I did mention this earlier, that a divorce decree then treats the ex-spouse for state law purposes as though they predeceased the divorcing spouse if the beneficiary designations are changed. So, for example, life insurance, which is not controlled by federal law, had this been a life insurance policy, the proceeds would have gone to Kara, not Liv, by virtue of the state law, even though the beneficiary designation had not been changed by
Bill. She would have been considered dead, essentially, and then it would go to the contingent beneficiary, which was most likely Kara.
And so the reference to that is most of the statutes say that the former spouse is treated as though they predeceased the insured in this example. So that's the way the state law applies it, but this is not state law. This is federal law, which is ERISA, and Jim, that's the problem that we have here. Bill didn't take that second step.
Mm-hmm. Federal law can get in the way of a few things. So it's funny you mention life insurance because I'm sure you are very, very familiar with the Hillman Marietta case.
Who?
Hillman versus Marietta.
I'm not familiar with the name of the case. I suspect I'm familiar with the outcome.
Do you think because he's a lawyer, he just has all cases ever brought to court memorized by their plaintiff and defendant?
Well, this kind of has to do with estate planning. I just assumed he did, but apparently he done.
Really?
I don't remember the names very often. So,
well, let's talk about that.
I think this is where his wife would consider you being mean to him.
So here's the thing: life insurance. Yes, insurance is controlled by state law. We know that. Our listeners may not know that. That can sometimes be a thorn in the side in my industry as a financial planner, because life insurance agents pawn themselves off as being retirement planners or financial planners, and they're not subject to the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, rules that I have to abide by, or the Financial Industry Regulatory Authorities, otherwise known as FINRA rules, that advisors, brokers, and registered reps have to abide by. Life insurance agents are regulated by the states, and they pretty much can say what they want, when they want, however much they want, except in Iowa. Iowa has very strict rules against life insurance agents pawning themselves off as being financial advisors, but very few states do. Colorado, Chris, you and I have opined repeatedly of a life insurance agent right here in Fort Collins who has been barred for life, Peter, under FINRA rules. Because he ripped off people and stole money from them. He's barred for life from working in the financial services industry. But DORA, Department of Regulatory Affairs in the state of Colorado, has given this idiot a life insurance license. He sells equity indexed annuities, and he calls himself a retirement planner. And he has the full blessings of the state of Colorado. So don't get me going on that. But
I think it's too late. I
think so. The states regulate life insurance. But there was a case, Hillman versus Marietta. Here's the case, and this is what makes it unique. You had a case where a gentleman had a $125,000 life insurance policy, and he died. Who do you think inherited the life insurance? His current wife or his ex-wife, who was still named on the life insurance policy as beneficiary?
Well, it'd be the ex-wife, except for the state law that applies. If that state had a law that terminated the ex-wife's rights to that policy by virtue of the divorce.
So what state was this in?
That's where it gets a little unique. It was in Virginia, and there was a law in Virginia that essentially granted, or removed rather, in after a divorce, the exes as
beneficiary of life insurance.
Okay.
Virginia had.
So there's your answer, isn't it?
Well, it didn't work that way, because the life insurance in question was a federal life insurance policy.
Oh, so you're throwing extra facts in now.
I am.
It's all twisting and turning.
That's called throwing you for a loop.
Apparently.
Yeah, and that expression was dead on. Good
Thank
job.
You.
Very, very nice.
Hitting you with a curveball.
Oops. Wow. You're on a roll now.
I am. I'm going like crazy. So what I'm getting at, people, in this particular case, you had a situation where a couple was in Virginia. Virginia has a law, Pete, you can expand on this law, that after divorce, spouses are automatically removed. We're talking about ERISA that automatically puts you on. State of Virginia passed a law that says after you get divorced, we're going to automatically remove no matter who is named.
Right, under state law.
Under state law. But here was a case where a gentleman had a life insurance policy at his employer that happened to be the federal government. Mm. And he never removed his ex-wife as beneficiary of his life insurance policy. So his current wife sued and said, hey, in Virginia, we have this law that removes the ex and puts me as the current spouse in. She lost. That went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Our Supreme Court.
Our Supreme Court. No one else's. Went right up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you know, that's a cute little law Virginia has, but this was a federal life insurance policy. Federal law applies, and we show no such protections, I guess you could say.
And the difference would be the insurance company is not
the federal government.
It's not an insurance company that would be licensed to sell insurance in the state of Virginia, thus be attached to Virginia law. This is the federal government essentially self-insuring. They're acting as the insurance company themselves. They're not registered in Virginia. They're just doing their own thing, and they're allowed to under federal law.
Right. So, again, we just kind of threw that in as a curveball that we weren't intending to talk about today. But what I hope people got out of today's show was the importance, Pete, of understanding beneficiary forms, especially everyone thinks in terms of their IRA that is exempt from all these ERISA rules. Unless the Department of Labor has their way, then IRAs will be subject to this rule, and you're going to start seeing even more problems in the future, Pete, because people just don't get that, yes, they hear the beneficiary form trumps everything. Well, it trumps everything except ERISA. And ERISA has certain rules granting retirement accounts to certain beneficiaries. And it's very important just update your beneficiary form. I can't say that enough. You should update your estate plan every few years. And as part of the estate plan, you should update the beneficiary forms. Do you guys do that? I don't want to throw you on the spot, but when you do an estate plan for someone, do you tell them, hey, let's review the beneficiary forms, or do you just tell them to do it? Or how do you suggest that gets done?
We will coordinate their ownership of real estate with their estate plan. Also, I will provide them beneficiary designations for retirement accounts, at least the way I want to see it with regard to coordinating it. Beyond that, with a will, we don't. We talk to them about, depending on what they're planning on doing and how it's set up, rearranging the beneficiaries or even the ownership, revocable living trust, we are available to provide that service if they elect. And it's a fee-based service, so most people like to take it on themselves other than the real estate, which we include in our planning. But we encourage them. We give them instructions on how to do it. But my experience is that very few follow through to that extent.
Well, hopefully our listeners found this an interesting show, but at least got the juices flowing. I know a lot of our listeners have to be dealing with a divorce or a remarriage or kids from a previous marriage. Make sure you pay attention to your beneficiary form. I said at the beginning of the show, you're not going to know because you're dead. But if you want to make sure your assets go to who you named on your form, understand how ERISA ties into it. And make sure you properly remove a spouse you don't want to inherit an account. And make sure you name a spouse you do want to inherit the account. And you just can't assume it's going to happen for you.
So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Once again, if you want to contact anyone here on the show, the most straightforward way to do that would be to go to jimhelps.com. That's jimhelps.com. You can find a contact form. We'll get it to anybody here, Jim, myself, or Peter. I don't get a lot of email, but if you want to contact us, just let us know.
Are you pleading with someone to send you
emails? Maybe somebody say hi or something every once in a while. So thanks for joining us. Those of you listening live, have a great Saturday. We'll be back next week with, I believe, a live show here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.